This is a Maisie Media production.
This episode is brought to you by AT&T and Cricket Wireless. During the Switch Pivot or Quit chats, we talk to women who have successfully navigated through some of the plot twist years of life and are eager to share their stories and what they've learned in the hopes of inspiring, teaching, or making even the slightest impact by candidly owning their truth. Hey girl, hey, and thanks for dropping in to the Switch Pivot or Quit podcast. Candid convo for the girl needing a lifestyle plot twist when she's deciding if it's time to switch, pivot, or quit. I'm Ayana Angel, a former sports entertainment publicist in New York City, turned traditionally published author with Simon & Schuster, who quit my old life to write a book, live in London for a bit, and explore my dreams to find my happiness and fulfillment. I'm here to help encourage and guide you through your plot twist years as your chief encourager and host of this podcast, Switch, Pivot, or Quit. Our community is continuously growing, so welcome to all the new listeners, and thank you all for those who are returning. If you love what you hear on the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast and want to show your love, head over to iTunes and leave us a review. A review just helps more people know about the podcast, and it helps to continue to amplify our voices as women in the space. Now, if you just can't get enough, come hang out with us on Instagram by following me at ayana.angel, and that's ayiana.angel, or drop by our website, switchpivotorquit.com. Now, let's get this conversation started. Hey, 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 good people. So we are back with another cracking corporate episode. As I've mentioned to you all before, a lot of these interviews took place some time ago. So since these interviews, many of our guests have switched positions, switched companies, switched their whole lives. No, I'm just kidding. But things have changed. And so I just want to make that very, very clear before I introduce the guests, because some of the things that we touch on in the interview and the context that they speak on things and present things, it may have slightly changed if their position in their company has changed or if the company that they work for overall has changed. But nonetheless, I still want to bring these conversations to you because all of the women have so many amazing things that they can share from their career experiences that I think will be beneficial to all of us. So without further ado, today's episode, we are going to get into a conversation with Emily K. Graham. Emily is currently the Chief Equity and Impact Officer at Omnicom, previously serving as Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer at Fleischmann Hillard. Emily has 15 years of global agency experience as a corporate communications strategist. When this interview took place, she was a partner and America's financial sector leader at Fleischmann Hillard. So same company, just a different role. In that role, she had been protecting corporate reputations and shaping the perception of some of the largest companies in finance and business for more than a decade, and she's under 35. So Emily served as a trusted counselor to banking and financial industry clients at the peak of the Great Recession, guiding them through communications challenges related to regulatory uncertainty, public scrutiny, and restoring trust in the capital markets. Before joining Fleischmann Hillard in 2017, Emily held senior positions at MWWPR and Brunston Marsteller, where she led communications efforts for several blue chip clients, including Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, U.S. Trust, Accenture, Southwest Airlines, Deloitte, and Morgan Stanley. I can only say that Emily is amazing, and I was extremely impressed by her, as I think you will be too. So let's just get into it. Emily, welcome to Cracking Corporate. We're excited to have this conversation with you today.
I'm so excited to be speaking with you. Thank you.
Of course, of course. So to get us started, I would love for you to share a little bit about your background and how you got into your field and maybe how you got to where you are today.
Okay. I am currently based in New York City. I have been in New York about 7 years longer than I anticipated. I've been there 8.5 years. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Dallas, Texas, outside of it in a place called Cedar Hill. And I have always been a communicator. I think from my earliest days, once I realized I had a affection towards speaking, I was at one point very shy. But once I realized that, I've been communicating now my professional career about 13, almost 14 years. Mm-hmm. I have always worked in a global agency environment and setting. And I am now a partner at a global agency, Fleischmann Hillard, and I've specialized mostly in corporate communications and in the financial services and professional services sector.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about what your day-to-day consists of. And obviously, we don't have to get too deep into the weeds, but like maybe an overview of what a typical or a exciting day looks like for you.
I have the most unpredictable variable schedule. That is why I love what I do. It is also extremely exhausting. You can't plan for it. Right. I can take today as for an example. I sit on my agency's executive leadership team. And so it's the close of the year. We had a 2-hour call about strategy, vision, financials. And then I quickly pivoted to a conversation about our global D&I strategy, because that's also a hat that I wear, and how we are working on executing our current approach and how we're revising it for the year ahead. So that was another call that I had. And then I hopped on a train and got to Washington, D.C. So that's where I'm speaking from you now. It's the third city I've been in this week. And it's only Thursday. Yes. And I also just had some conversations around some new business opportunities. I, in my role at Fleischmann Hillard, I prospect and grow current clients and potential clients, also talent. I want to work with some of the best and brightest individuals. And so I'm always looking at our talent strategy and just marketing and thought leadership. How do we show up? Mm-hmm. And so that has been my day. It is 3:00. I had a little bit of a green smoothie. I haven't had lunch yet. and that is an unpredictable day for me. I'll probably finish calls around and try to have some personal time, but my days include client work, strategic planning, and talking to colleagues from all around the world. I think today I've spoken with colleagues in 4 countries already.
Wow. So how or when did you find your voice in your career?
It began early on, and this is something that I really recommend for young professionals. When you start to shape who you are and what you want, that's okay. It's empowering. Don't be afraid of that voice. Don't be afraid of the instincts that you begin to develop. And I knew early that variety in a career was critical for me. That's why I've been so attracted to the agency environment. And if I were ever to leave an agency environment, I still need something dynamic, and that's enriching for me. And so my first job, I was at a global PR firm. I had done 5 internships as an undergraduate. Wow. And so I had experience working across boutique marketing and global agencies and midsize. So I kind of got a sense for what I wanted to do. And I began really assessing then what my skills and my strengths were, areas I wanted to hone in on. And so that's how I began to really build my career. I knew that I was a leader. I liked leading. I liked cultivating teams. And so that shaped the type of work and pursuits I did. I also knew I loved clients. I really enjoy servicing them. I really enjoy making our name as a firm be top in our industry, and by doing that, advancing our reputation. So that's a little bit about how I started to gather what I knew I was good at, what I enjoyed to do, and it's helped me kind of build my career today.
Mm-hmm. What's one thing that you've learned that's crucial in being an effective leader? Because you said early on you knew you liked leadership, and now you're in a position where you're on the executive team, and that's a huge accomplishment. But I feel like sometimes people want that,
but they're not always ready or they're not always equipped with the skills. And it's a hard pill to swallow when you realize that you're not ready, or when you don't realize it and you realize it too late because you're in the midst of things. Mm-hmm. So what's one thing that you've learned about yourself or about leadership that's crucial to being an effective leader?
Mm-hmm. Leadership is a combat sport. It is not a spectator sport. You really got to be in it. You roll up your sleeves, you roll up your pants, and you just got to dig in if this is something you want. Because being a leader requires humility. It requires ambition. It requires empathy. And you will be discovering new ways of leadership all of the time. You really must learn to listen. You really must learn to admit and accept fault and weaknesses quickly. If you do not, you run the risk of being out of touch with the people that you want to lead. The other hard thing about being a leader is inspiring others to follow.
Right.
You can't proclaim to be a leader just because you have the title, the salary, or the position. A leader is one whom people want to work with, alongside, look up and say, you know what, because this leader is in place, I can do it. People do leave companies because of managers, not because of companies generally. Mm-hmm. It's the human element. And so for me, being a leader has been learning all of those things. I am very passionate. I move at a very fast pace. I have high expectations. And those are qualities that have led me to my career. It can also be hard on folks because I'm pretty tough. And so, you know, finding a balance between managing and coaching and developing is something that I really have tried hard to do. I know everyone wants to be on a winning team, a team that's encouraging. And so that's how I've cultivated my leadership skills and found other people whose leadership style I appreciated. Mm-hmm. I emulated them.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. You mentioned briefly about, you know, learning some of the tough lessons when things don't go the way that they're supposed to. The first thing that came to my mind is, and you said humility, first thing that came to my mind is humbling experiences. Do you have anything that has happened in your career that you would be willing to share that was maybe a humbling experience and a good learning lesson for you on your track to continuing to advance in your professional career?
So many things, you know, I've said in my past and when I was younger, having to show up in places and spaces where I'm the only face that looks like me. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you are a young woman of color, right, in an environment and industry that is not used to seeing you, and then being mistaken for an admin or being credentialed about when did you graduate from college and what are you here to do before you can even get to the business of the meeting. Mm-hmm. Those are humbling experiences that you really have to make sure don't corrupt and make you bitter. Mm-hmm. I also would say in an environment where you are a leader, I'm in the agency life. So things that humble you are when your team members resign or when you lose a piece of business from a client because you recognize that you can't wear all the capes. You can't save all the things or all the people. So I've had experiences where I've had to be faced with difficult conversations and maybe I was a part of the reason. And those things have really made me reframe my focus. I remember early in my career when I really thought I was the best person for a potential role in an account, that account being given to somebody else over me. And I really took personal offense to that. I was really hard on myself. And I think I was just undervalued. And frankly, I don't think they did the wrong thing because I undervalued myself. I didn't advocate for myself. I didn't speak up. So I think if you don't have a few bruised egos and moments where you just need to call your friend or your mom and your dad and just let them hear you be vulnerable, I don't think you're growing or learning as a leader.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You mentioned difficult conversations. Have you gleaned any tips or recognized anything that's helped you to navigate initiating difficult conversations?
I was going to say receiving or giving, because they're different.
Either one you want to speak to, you know, whichever one.
I spoke about leadership and empathy. And I can't stress enough how important it is that a person can put themselves in the perspective of someone else when delivering difficult feedback or termination. I mean, there are so many levels of difficultness that you can go to when you're in a professional environment. I also think you must be able to take out the ego, take out the hierarchy, and just look at a person eye to eye. And I don't care if that means that, yes, I'm the partner, but you might only have 2 years of experience. There is a certain level of comfort that people get when they know that you're not posturing because of position. And I do believe that there are always positive aspects to any negative situation. So try to lead with that. Don't be fake, but certainly don't be weak either, because there is something really important about making sure people leave any difficult situation still knowing there's hope, even if it means that they're not going to work with you anymore. Something that gives them something to hold on to, because people really look back and hold on to negative feedback. They hold on to bad situations, and it can shape their entire career choices based on that. So that's what I try to do. Be honest, be open, be empathetic, but don't lie. You don't do any favors with anyone when you lie to them when you're in a difficult delivery. And be specific. Because that way you won't leave any room for doubt or wonder as to, no, that's not true or accurate, or this didn't happen. And they will respect that more.
Hiring is one of the things that you do not want to mess up. You need to hire great people if you want to take your entire business to the next level. With the stakes this high, there's only one choice, and that's Indeed. Now let me tell you why. Indeed delivers 1.5 times more hires than internal referrals, according to TalentNest. Indeed is the number one source of hires in the United States, according to TalentNest. And Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Do you want your quality shortlist fast? You need Indeed. Right now, our listeners get a free $75 credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/SPQ. This is Indeed's best offer available anywhere. Get a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/SPQ. That's Indeed.com/SPQ. Offer valid through March 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
New hires, let's talk about that a little bit, because that's building a team. And I'm sure that you have encountered your fair situations of being the person having to make a decision about bringing someone new in. How intimidating was that the first time you did it? Was it intimidating? And how does a new hire by you affect your standing or your perception within the company?
It's so interesting. I was having a conversation with a colleague earlier today who had to terminate someone and from her team, and it was based on performance. But it was difficult for her because she had advocated for this person. They didn't perform well. And she felt as if that was a reflection on her and damaging potentially her reputation. And then to take it a step further, we as women of color, and me as an executive woman of color, when I bring on another person of color, especially a woman, I am keenly aware that their performance is acutely linked to mine, no matter what anyone says, that's what they think and feel. And that can create pressures for both she or he and I. And I try my best to help them navigate what can be a very uncomfortable, uncertain space when you don't see yourself. And I believe new hires are an excellent opportunity to start infiltrating a culture if you want to amplify or shift or whatever. If you like where you work and you are bringing on new team members, that is a huge opportunity.
I have tried to actively hire as many young, ambitious, experienced, open-minded women of color as possible. That's just frank, true, but also women, period. And then any man can apply to. I love to have new hires come in and feel like they have a flat runway to really achieve and accomplish as much as possible. When I had to start hiring people, it was really important for me to look at what type of cultural value they would add, but also, are we diversifying our team? Because this is a pervasive issue in the industry, and I want to make sure that we are really looking at what they're adding, not only physically, but all the other things that come with being culturally diverse and making sure that we're adding and not detracting from our environment.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to jump into the interview side a little bit. Have you gleaned any tips or recognized anything throughout your career that you said, huh, if more people knew about this in terms of an interviewing technique, this would be beneficial to them?
Mm. You know how people say you don't remember what people said, but you remember how they made you feel?
Mm-hmm.
That is so important for candidates because it is after a candidate's interview, during the debrief, that the most common feedback is really about something just not being right and you can't put your finger on it. And I'm not meaning in a biased way.
Right.
I'm meaning because I do think that people respond to emotion and energy more than anything else. That's why they can't really articulate what they're feeling. It's emotion and it's energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found that if your energy is not really on during your interview, that it can read as disengagement or if you don't want to be there. I'm not talking about high energy or low energy. I'm just talking about intentful energy. Interviews should be treated as a platform for you to really showcase your strengths, your eagerness, and your thinking. Think too often when you get a question during the interview that you didn't prepare for, it can throw people a bit aside. But what they shouldn't forget is that the best interviews are conversations that you look up in 30 minutes or an hour and you're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe where the time is gone. And so I would say energy and emotion are essential. Don't try to hide or block those. Treat interviews as conversations and do your best to prepare, but don't over-prepare.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think there needs to be some room for some organic exchanges in thinking.
Right. Yeah, I love that. So now the person has the job. What qualities do you look for in an employee that's wanting a promotion or wanting to advance within the company?
First thing I think about is resourcefulness, and it's selfish because the more resourceful and independent you are, the less I'm going to have to do your job and my job.
That makes sense.
It will make me see you in such a wonderful light if I am confident that you can do your job and I can do my job and you can even help me do my job sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And because I do need and expect a certain level of proficiency of learning the ropes. You know, when you're new, it's tough, but once you learn them, I really want you to take the ball and run. I don't believe in micromanagement, but I do believe in a hunger, and I love a provocative thinking, curious, intellectually person. I think too many folks try to just do what they are either told or expected to do and don't color outside the lines or have that drive and ambition to shoot past the goal. And I'd love to see more of that. That's what I look for in candidates. I love people who come from interesting backgrounds and have done interesting things. They traveled the world. They took a year off. They are an artist on the weekends, just because I think people bring such richness when they have passions in life and they're not just working. And I would say a final one is just somebody who has a pleasant demeanor.
You briefly touched on micromanagement and you not being a micromanager. And it's so funny because we know that, as you also mentioned, people typically leave companies because of people and not because of the actual company, right? Mm-hmm. And we've only had one person admit so far during the course of the interviews that they are a micromanager. And I really love that she admitted it because we were able to dive into it a little bit more. And I think it gives perspective for people who might be dealing with that type of situation. What do you think of the advice to treat your manager as a coach?
It is essential. When people focus on traditional manager, supervisor, subordinate relationships, they lose so much. Mm-hmm. I think coaching has certain requirements. First off, generally a coach has done that before. Right. Most coaches are former players. Mm-hmm. That's first off. Second thing is, and since they're former players, they get that you had to run drills, that you had to do lunges, that you had to lift weights. They get that you had to do these difficult things, so they understand a breaking point. And when you're looking at your coach for encouragement or sometimes a tough discussion, you respect them. You respect them. You have a little more respect for your coach, especially if you know they're vested in helping you win. Mm-hmm. Technically, a coach has the same vested interest in you winning as you do. And when you see somebody wanting you to win and not just a person who's critiquing you because you were late on this deadline or have this issue with getting it to work on time, or you have to work home from home because you're sick, you just start to have a better relationship and you're able to cultivate something that's unique and frankly lasting when you leave that.
I know my people, and if you're anything like me, as a podcast listener, you're also multitasking. You're zipping around the house, you're running errands, you're doing all the things. I'm sure that's you, right? Because it's me too. But another thing that we have in common is our familiarity with Walgreens. Who doesn't know about Walgreens? But did you know about my Walgreens? Well, it's not my Walgreens, it's yours. Well, it's really ours. Okay, all you need to know is that it's the new, easier way to shop, save, and stay well. And now you can order online and pick up in as little as 30 minutes curbside drive-thru or in-store. Right now, get 20% off purchases of $30 or more with the code SPQ when you order online or use the new Walgreens app. Again, that's code SPQ for 20% off your purchases of $30 or more. Order online or with the new Walgreens app today, and you'll be saving time in no time. Offer valid online through January 23rd, 2021 on qualifying same-day orders. Must be signed into your Walgreens.com account to redeem. Additional restrictions apply. See Walgreens.com/offer details and Walgreens.com/pickup for details. This episode is brought to you by Cricket Wireless. It's the time of year when we focus on being smarter than we were the year before. That means losing the excess baggage of what just doesn't serve us anymore. Cricket Wireless invites you to leave behind that excess wireless bloat that locks you into paying for plan features you don't use and you don't need. Switch to Cricket Wireless and get the plan that's just right for you, starting at $30 per month. We're Cricket Wireless, and it's just how we do it. Activation and other fees and restrictions apply. Terms subject to change. See store for details. Do you think that there's a science to vying for a promotion?
That is hard because I think it's a little bit of art and science, but There are some key criteria to promotions.
Okay.
One rule of thumb I have always heard is that a promotion is a recognition you receive when you are already doing the job you want. Mm. I don't know if as I go further in my career, I completely agree with that, but I certainly think it's true earlier in your career. And I say that because there are stretch roles that you see that are bigger than you are currently, but when challenged, you can do it, but it's going to take you some time to get it done. Mm-hmm. You're going to need 6 months to 8 months to really find your path, and maybe even a year, because it's a big job. but you still have demonstrated enough potential and promise where nobody thinks you're going to fail. So I think there is something to be said about how you are already performing at least and definitely above where you want to go. Other things about promotions people don't seem to realize, if they're in a company where they're on a cycle, promotion conversations don't happen during promotion month. Promotion conversations start generally 4 to 6 months before promotion, because numbers have to be submitted, evaluations have to be given, and you start to get a clearer picture on your promotion way then. So you can't do some Hail Mary and expect that your promotion chances will increase a month before promotion. There's a lot of seeding that goes into it, and frankly, it might even be a year before the promotion that goes into evaluating you and preparing you. Other thing I found is that promotions are not usually a one person's decision. You have stakeholders who are all a part of the approval and review process of a promotion. And if you have a majority of stakeholders not believe that you are ready for promotion, generally you will not be promoted. Now, there's usually one person, your manager, who makes the final decision, but they are influenced heavily by others that they have respect for. So your work is not just to impress upon your manager that you should be promoted. It's to impress upon the influencers that you should be promoted. And this can include peers, subordinates, and managers that work on other things within your business. They're all influencers. The last thing I would say about promotions is they are not deserved, they are earned. And I think too many people think because they've done time served, they should actually get the next promotion because look how many years it's been or months. That's not how it works. Because on the same sense, if you are doing a phenomenal job, I don't want to wait a whole year or two to get promoted because that's what the formula says. I want to get promoted as quickly as possible and move up in the organization. Just as so, you don't want to say, well, my year is done, I should be this. You want it to be so undoubtable that you have proven and shown that you are excellent, that there's no reason why you shouldn't secure that promotion. So those are the things that I think are common.
You gave us some good stuff there. I want to talk about negotiations within a company. Let's say you're already working somewhere and you're looking for more, and maybe the door is open or maybe it's not. How do you approach those situations where you're feeling like you're doing above and beyond, you're deserving, and you want more, but you don't really know how to go about asking for more? And let me tell you a little bit of my thought process with this question. Number one, as you've mentioned, being women of color, sometimes it's difficult. You're the only representation around you, which can sometimes feel isolating and make you feel like, who is in my corner? Not exactly sure. Also, sometimes when we come into corporate environments, maybe some of us, our parents haven't been exactly where we're going. So it's hard for them to counsel us on the moves that we should be making or the things that we should be doing. And I remember one time, a colleague of mine, she shared that she went in and asked for more money at a completely random time. And she had a set amount that she was asking for. And she made her case and she got it. But I never knew that she did that. And I would have never thought to do that. So I'm asking this question because I'm wondering, have you been in this type of situation before where you did something that wasn't maybe the norm, but you felt like it was the right move to make? And how do we navigate the situations of negotiating things for ourselves when we don't even really know what's possible all the time? Mm. I know this is a big question, but it's just all these thoughts swirling through my head.
No,
so whatever you have.
Well, similar to promotions, I do not think salary negotiations happen in a month or the month of promotion. If you've been showcasing value and you believe that there are more opportunities for you to earn and it's not reflected in the value you're creating, I completely agree with what your colleague did. That doesn't have to happen the month of promotions or 3 months before.
once you start to feel that you are over indexing on your performance and your value isn't being reflected, sure, you can have those conversations, but I think it's about the approach. And I think it's about you having an honest conversation with yourself. Mm-hmm. The worst thing to do is to expect that because someone else has gotten an increase or makes a certain amount of money, you found it out, let's say.
Right.
So you found out somebody is making more than you, that you say, all right, that's what I needed. I'm going to go in there and say, what's going on? Now, let's not mix up pay discrimination, which happens all the time. And frankly, there should always be an equal scale for all people in similar positions and backgrounds and levels of experience. What I'm talking about, though, is disparate performances of people, because the truth is everyone does not get paid the same at the same exact levels. You might have a five-figure range and sometimes more than that. Mm-hmm. People who have similar titles. What I would say is that you should have been so clear on the value you offer, the specific instances in which you've done it, increasing role and responsibility, a return on the contributions you've made, that giving you a salary increase is not hard. When I have found that people want more money and they come in and they present a case to secure more money, I have found that it can be as easy as saying, okay, or wow, let me check on that and I'll get back to you. Mm-hmm. It is not as difficult as it's made out to seem, or the battle that it's made out to seem. I do believe that people who have gone and asked for more do demonstrate to their employer that they know their value, that they feel valuable and they want to be compensated for their work. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's greedy. I think it's perfectly fine to do. And yes, I've done it in my career. I've been very specific about the ask and what I felt I wanted and needed, and also that I had earned. Not deserve, but earned. Right. I think it's very important to know the difference between those two things, because I don't want to position entitlement. Do you believe that working hard and helping achieve objectives and having tangible results is essential before you ask for anything more?
You know, it's come up a lot that people think because they do the work, they're going to be given what they think they deserve. But sometimes that ask has to be made, right?
A lot of times the ask has to be made. It just can't be obnoxious. And I have been on the receiving end of ask, and I've looked at people like they had two heads. Like, why do you think you should get that? You are not the one. No, this mm-hmm. is not realistic, obviously. But there have been other times where someone sat down and asked me something, and I was like, I couldn't wait for you to ask. What took mm-hmm. you so long? I'm not going to ask for you.
Yeah.
You have to know your value and your worth, and you have to also know your ambition. What do you want? Your job is not to come to your job every day and just do what you're doing for your to-do list. That is so mundane. Your ambition in life, your desire to achieve and to contribute, that matters so much. And so I encourage people to make it clear to themselves what they want. And I was told by one of the leaders at my firm that when I was talking about some of the ambition that I had, he told me I was thinking too small.
Mm.
You should think bigger. You can do much more than that. Pretend as if you had no boundaries and you had a blank check. Write it. And I want to advise people to do that more. And it's something I'm advising and recommending that I do all the time now. Just think bigger and bolder. And I'm not saying that that makes you foolhardy or makes you seem greedy or overly ambitious. I don't think there's such thing as being overly ambitious. I think it makes you hopeful, optimistic, and it gives you something to drive towards, which we all need.
In your career, what turned out to be more challenging than you expected? And what turned out to be easier than you expected?
More challenging than I expected is certainly people issues.
Mm.
It is by far the most challenging thing as a leader to understand, adapt to, and create environments that people want to work in and their individual needs and goals.
Right.
Because I do like to hire driven and really excellent people. They have needs, and it is extremely competitive out in the marketplace. And that is difficult. The other difficulty is
me feeling comfortable sharing my journey and story. Mm. Now that I have become more seasoned in career, and now that people like you, for some reason, think I'm worthy to speak to, I have had a hard time coming to terms with that and recognizing that it matters and it's essential for people to hear stories. And then I saw Michelle Obama came out with Becoming, and mm-hmm. everyone went wild, right? Mm-hmm. Because everyone loves that book and they love her sharing her story. And I just realized there's so much power in it. And yeah. becoming who I am and stepping into my dream and future is something I must do. I must do it not only for myself, but for the others who it's inspiring and matters to. So that's been difficult. What's come easiest? I remember going to meetings at my older companies and sitting down and looking at the senior person in the front of the room, espousing ideas, and everyone's writing furiously, and they are saying the smartest things, and they're so relevant and timely, and you're like, how do they come up with that? I have now become the senior person in the room espousing thoughts and views and creating strategies, and I never thought I'd be able to do that. I never did.
That's so amazing.
Something happens in your career where you start to become the person in the front of the room, and it is such a thrilling, exciting moment to know that I'm growing in that way.
Woo, honey. Emily, like, why wouldn't we want to hear your story? Like, of course we want to. We want to talk to you forever. Everybody wants to have you on speed dial as their go-to girl. Okay? Like, you know.
Thank you.
So much.
You're giving me so much love and energy. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Of course. Of course. I'm just over here beaming with pride because I love everything that you're saying. And I'm sure that so many women are going to get a lot from what you share with us, but we're almost done. We're not quite done yet with you.
let's keep going. Let's do it.
So you talked about sharing your story a little bit more and mm-hmm. stepping into that. Is it a strategically sound move to establish a personal brand outside of your company?
God, I don't know. And you know, the reason why I never pursued individual brand positioning. It came right. to me. Mm-hmm. If it were up to me, wouldn't speak to anyone. and this is just because I'm pretty private. Mm-hmm. I'm not very avid user of social media. I know I'm a millennial, but it's not my natural instinct to go stand on the stage with the lights beaming on me and take it all in. I'd rather put my clients there. That's what I do. It's been my career. Mm-hmm. I think it has been strategically sound, especially for the company that I work for, because they've gotten far more exposure in terms of being a place where a person of color can thrive. And I have to say they've been phenomenal. They've been absolutely amazing. I did doubt if it was wise for me to kind of go and tell these revealing, raw, honest stories about my experience as a woman of color in communications industry and then want to have future jobs. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's worth it. It's strategically sound because it's honest and there are learning opportunities for people. They need to know this. They need to adjust their environments and their cultures. We need to be honest with one another. And frankly, far too long, we've not had any stories like this.
Yeah.
So let's do it. Let's all come together around the campfire. Let's keep it real with one another. And if I can be a vehicle to usher in change in this industry and so many others look and feel different in 10, 15 years time, I will be immensely proud. And it will be something that my children and their children will be proud of. So it's strategically sound, 100%.
Mm-hmm. I love that answer. What practices or tactics maybe do you use, if any at all, when it's time to make big decisions in your career?
I am a list person, pros and cons. Mm-hmm. I also make sure that it is worth it for me. I don't look at any career move based on salary alone or based on title alone. That's the biggest mistake to me. Mm. I look at career moves based on quality and what will it do for me? What is the return on investment? Because let's say I spend
1 to 5 years there. I can't get that time back. Mm-hmm. What does this company have? What does the position have to offer me that I know the investment of my time will be paid back? And let's say I do stay at the company longer than that. Is there enough dimension and room for growth where I feel like I could do that? Am I going to be able to show up on day one with natural hair? Seriously.
No, yeah.
Am I going to be able to show up on week two with it? Or am mm-hmm. I going to have to show up and be different? Do I have to code switch? These are the things I think about because they will impact my long-term happiness. Then after I look at all that growth potential, leadership, do they have a company vision and the direct person I'm working with or for, can I believe in them? Mm. Do they make me feel confident? Do they inspire me? I've never taken any position without really having an affinity for the person I was going to work for. It was personal for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I have turned down opportunities to even interview at places where there was no diversity.
Mm.
When I looked on the website and I saw there was no diversity in the leadership team, mm-hmm. meaning no women, no younger people, no people of color at all, I right. just didn't even go.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe that I'm not about to be the guinea pig. Nope.
Exactly.
And then it was about financials and title, because I don't want to do a lateral. I want to go up. And
yeah.
But I will do a lateral maybe if it's worth it.
If it's worth
it. So those are all the things that I look at.
Knowing what you know now, what's one thing that maybe we haven't touched on in this conversation that you would love to share with the women who are listening, who are mid-career, still working their way up that ladder and trying to figure it all out and put all the pieces together?
Be kinder to yourself. Let go of anxiety and competition with one another. If you want to compete and it is super important to you, put yourself on a timeline in a focus area. Become an expert in what you do so your value cannot be denied. Spend more time really honing in on your skill. And, you know, I just was speaking with one of my mentees who was hoping to get an opportunity that didn't come through. And that's okay. What is for you is intended for you, and no one else will ever be able to take what you have and make it their own. And so, young women, please be relentless in pursuit. Please hold yourself to high regard. Find a right mentor and coach for you that can pour into you and develop. Be kind to one another. There doesn't just have to be one of us.
Mm-hmm.
There doesn't have to just be two of us. It is okay to be surrounded or be in the presence of others who look like you, because that means we are starting to make an imprint.
Mm-hmm.
And let's embrace that. And frankly, be confident, have poise, have presence, work on your delivery, work on your ability to navigate a very tough environment as a young woman in corporate spaces. But know that it absolutely can be done, and that I believe in you and I encourage you. And you can come find me, reach out to me, and we can talk about it. I completely offer that to you because I want you to win.
Absolutely. My final question, Emily, what does success mean or look like for you?
What success will begin to look like for me? Opportunities to strive and savor. And maybe that is a good way of finding a little bit more balance. So I do believe in the ambition fueling us, but I do believe that we need time to reflect. And I haven't had enough of those moments. So I know I'm becoming far more successful when I spend more time savoring and reflecting so I can refuel. Success to me also looks like no limits. I don't want to box myself in. I want to have as much freedom within my career goals to drive as far as I need to. And that is something only I can limit. Nobody else can limit it for you. You can limit yourself. And success also means that I'm not the only one. I will know I'm more successful when I feel like I'm seeing more people like me doing what I do. And I will continue to charge that ahead as much as I can. And that's when I feel like success will have started to happen.
Emily, you are amazing. You are amazing.
You are. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for sharing with us. I know that all of the words that you share with us today are going to greatly impact those of us who have been able to absorb them. As you mentioned, you're open to connecting. So if you want to share maybe your LinkedIn or something, feel free, because we know you're not the social media queen.
Let me tell you LinkedIn and Twitter, because I think they're the same.
Okay.
It's M, like my first name, just shortened, E-M-K, my middle initial, and then Graham, my last name, G-R-A-H-A-M, like Graham Cracker. And that's Twitter and LinkedIn.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Thank you so much, Emily. Appreciate you. This was really, really good. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's a wrap on another cracking corporate interview. After such a crazy week last week, you guys, I just hope that this is bringing some goodness into your world. You're feeling the positive and inspirational vibes. I'm sincerely hoping that you guys are appreciating these conversations. And if you are and you're finding value in them, be sure to DM me as you're listening or after you've already listened. Just send me a quick note and let me know, because I want to know what your vibe is off of these cracking corporate interviews. All right, as always, be good.